Welcome to the Apple Context Machine, a podcast about all things Apple, with your hosts, Jeff Gamet and Brian Chaffin.
Today is September 18th, 2010, and this is the Apple Context Machine, episode number 178, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor for TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, TAM salesman. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at ACM.
Pew, 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 pew. Pew, 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 pew.
At macobserver.com.
I had to duck so I didn't get hit by flying bullets. And the funny thing is, this is not a video podcast, so you actually missed the duck and me miming the bullets going over my head as I told you about it.
Oh, but now you've painted the image in my head, so it's like I was there.
Yeah, that's just magic. So, Tams.
you're such a great straight man.
Hey, thanks.
I didn't even tell you what my title was going to be, and you're so nice enough to ask about it. Yeah, so I have one more 20th anniversary Mac, and I want to sell it.
Those things are just so cool.
They are cool. I don't have room for it. I just don't have room for it, and it needs a loving home. Very similar to the last one. The last one is I had two, and they both came from Johnny Ive's private stores, or so I was told. And Neil Pan, the architect, bought the first one and put it up on a shelf next to some other older Mac models, and it looks gorgeous. That's the kind of home this other one needs.
Now, okay, so first, I love that you pointed out that Neil is the architect.
Right, he's Neil Pan, the architect. Yeah,
the architect. Right. And then second, I agree, your second TAM needs a loving and cool home.
It does. It needs a loving and cool home.
So would your TAM be worth more to anyone if you autographed it for them when they bought it?
Probably not.
Oh.
I didn't really have much to do with it.
Well, it was yours, though, and you are, after all, Brian Chaffin.
I am Brian effing Chaffin. That's true. I am. I am. But I wish that it had a Johnny Ives signature. The Apple engineer I got him from said that that Johnny gave him to him because Johnny was clearing out some space. And I believe the guy was telling me the truth, for what that's worth.
You know, we could totally arrange for a Johnny Ives signature on that.
No, we can't.
I'm just saying.
We can't.
Well, it's not going to be him signing
it. Right. Right. Good point. Good point.
You are so bad at this scamming
thing.
No,
man. You know, it's just too bad I don't have room for it. Those things are just so freaking cool, and they still look cool after all these years.
They do.
It's ridiculous.
You know, I have a beautiful Mac Classic mm-hmm. sitting on a pedestal, really, in the corner of my office. Mm-hmm. And even that looks cool. But, man, the TAMs, they just had that future slick look.
Well, you know, for
$600,
which
now is kind of retro.
You can replace that Mac Classic with a TAM.
I could. And yet I would feel horrible knowing that I took that off the market and none of your avid fans would have a chance to get a piece of of Mac history that's passed from Johnny Ive through you to them.
Well, technically, it's from Johnny to an engineer to me.
He was just the middleman.
All righty, that's enough of that.
All right. So, what? Maybe it's time for me to start the next thing.
Yeah, the next thing. We'll do the thing.
Cool.
And then in my earphones or headphones, I'll play the ting tings.
Excellent. Okay, so it's the music thing, then the me talk thing, and then us talk thing, right?
Right. All the while, the ting tings.
Right. Yahoo is sure Apple's iAd program is doomed to fail. Europe's self-service providers are tired of Apple and Google horning in on their territory. And Apple has a new music social network.
Yep. Yahoo CEO Carol Bart thinks that Apple's iAd service is doomed to failure. Doomed, I say, because potential advertisers will eventually get tired of the company's controlling nature. She added that she doesn't see much future in iTunes either. In the iPhone, forget about it. Who's going to want a device where Apple controls everything, huh? Okay, she didn't say those last two things, nor is she a guy from somewhere close to New York. But she did say that the rest of the world is going to not like iAd because, quote, Apple wants total control over those ads, unquote. Jeff and I are going to explore the value in Mrs. Bart's, or Miss Bart's, as the case may be, comments in the Context Machine.
And Europe's mobile phone service providers aren't happy with Apple and Google getting chummy with cell phone customers, so they've decided to try to find a way to sidestep both companies. France Telecom Orange CEO Stéphane Richard, not nearly as cool as when you say it though, Brian. Yeah. Anyhow, he called a meeting with other service providers to start working on a joint strategy and possibly even an alternate mobile phone OS that they can push on manufacturers. Telecom Orange, Deutsche Telekom, Telefonica.
What?
Oh, come on. Didn't you like that pronunciation?
No.
So what, you went Deutsche Telekom?
I do, yes.
Okay, just to be clear, I do have a speech impediment because I learned how to speak in Missouri, okay? All right, so Telecom Orange, Deutsche Telekom.
I like it.
Telefonica and Vodafone executives are hoping they'll be able to find ways to cut off Apple and Google from having direct relationships with mobile phone users and push those customers back into seeing service providers as their point of contact for product features. Now, word on the street is that the carriers are looking at customizing Google's own Android OS to force customers to deal with them instead of Apple and Google for all those extra apps and features.
On September 1st, Apple announced several new products, and we haven't done a show since September 1st, so we're talking about today, including the company's foray into social networking. Bing! In an age where, quote-unquote, new social networking site has reached the point of eliciting more chuckles than interest, Apple is hoping that by basing Ping out of iTunes and centering it around music and music only, that it will be able to find its own niche and not simply get Facebooked into Insta obscurity. The jury is out on that so far, but Apple announced the service had attracted more than 1 million users in its first 48 hours. And that sound means that it's time for the Context Machine within the Context Machine. That's where Jeff and I delve a little more deeply into the news to provide context for what's going on.
Yeah, and so we said we were going to talk about Carol Bart's. So you want to start there?
Yeah, well, we can just go in order of how we introduced them.
Okay, that totally works. It's like a plan, and okay.
I like it.
All right, so, yeah, the whole thing with dissing iAds, or iAd, excuse me, you know, on one hand, I get it, because they have their own, well, they have their own thing. Now it's Microsoft's own thing that they have. people. So, on one hand, I can see the posturing, and but I think some of the reasons that she's offering up, like Apple wants too much control over ads, I'm just not seeing that as a reason for iAd to fail.
Well, you know, we talked about this in our, one of our staff meetings this week. And I pointed out then that of all the pies that Apple has its fingers in right now, iAd definitely offers the biggest opportunity for the company to fail.
Well, yeah, they have to be careful how they deal with the advertisers that are using the service, because there are alternatives, not necessarily that would get them what they want on the iPhone, but there definitely are alternatives for these companies or alternative places for them to spend their advertising dollars.
Right. Well, and I think it's fair to point out that that Miss Bartz is absolutely correct, that everybody's in the brother is going to be tired of the way Apple's trying to control the process. Of course, but I have so many conflicting thoughts here. The flip side of that is that Apple has that control and saw an opportunity for iAd because no one else can do it right. No one else was doing mobile ads anywhere near as cool as iAd is. And the secret or the ability for iAd to succeed or fail is going to hinge not on Apple's controlling nature, because again, everybody does hate that. Everybody besides Apple, of course. But whether or not Apple can deliver eyeballs. And if they can do that, everybody, she's flat out wrong. The Apple's controlling nature isn't going to keep people away. They're going to, you know, pinch their nose and you know, hold their breath and deal with Apple anyway, even though they're pissed off about it the whole time.
Now, I could see a scenario where Apple is able to draw in the potential eyeballs that advertisers want to see. And then those advertisers turning around to companies like Yahoo and Google and saying, look, we have these really rich, cool, interactive ads that we can run on iOS. Why can't we run these same things on your services? And then other companies having to adapt to allow the same types of ads that Apple is pushing with iAd.
Right. And if... Okay, so let's say that iAd works as well as Apple has said it's worked so far. Or not actually, not Apple, but advertisers have said that they're seeing substantially more conversions with iAds than they do with traditional in-app marketing.
Right.
So let's say that Apple can continue to deliver that kind of performance. If everybody else was able to duplicate what Apple's doing, then again, I think Ms. Bartz has there's merit to what she's saying, that no one's going to want to turn around and deal with Apple and its control fetish when they can get the same thing elsewhere. The reality, though, is that it's that control fetish that's helping to deliver that performance.
Sure. And then there's also the added bonus of the massive installed user base of iOS devices.
Well, yeah, but everybody else can, you know, there aren't all that many apps yet that are even serving up iAd. You know, there are more ad impressions being served on other non-Apple networks than there are for the iAd.
Okay, that's actually a really good point. And I'm sitting here trying to think of apps that I have downloaded that I've actually seen iAds in.
Yeah, I haven't seen that many.
Yeah, the ones that I can think of were applications that I downloaded specifically because I had been told there are iAds in them,
right,
and I wanted to see what happened.
Right.
So, but yeah, I just haven't by chance stumbled across an app that's using iAds.
Right. I mean, but they are out there, and Apple is serving up ads, and yeah, there's lots and lots of grousing. I have no doubt that Ms. Bartz has heard directly from advertisers and marketing agencies that are just, you know, talking or yakking her ear off about what a nightmare it is to work with Apple. But again, the reality is that Apple is able to deliver something for all that control. They're delivering an experience that is getting people to tap through on these ads in much higher numbers than they're doing it with other platforms. And if that continues, it doesn't matter if Apple is a pain in the butt to work with. The advertisers will go where they're getting the best performance for their dollar.
Yep, that just stands to reason.
Mm-hmm.
And considering the headaches that developers have had dealing with Apple as the whole iOS platform and App Store thing evolves, and the fact that they all just keep coming back and coming back, that's saying a lot right there.
Uh-huh.
So if they can replicate that type of interest on their ad platform, then it may very well parallel what's been going on with their developer relationships. And it'll be a love-hate thing. Although there's always developers out there that will say, look, I've never had trouble. It's been great for me. So I think it's possible if Apple plays its cards right and everything works out the way they're hoping for, it'll just parallel what's going on with their developer community.
It will. And there's one more thing here, too. It's always funny to me when these third-party companies bitch about what Apple is doing and seem completely oblivious to the fact that they can't get it right. they can't get it right, yet Apple's the one with the problem. And Apple does get it right.
Yeah, you know, part of the problem that I see is that so many of these companies have a reactionary philosophy to the market. And so they react, they follow along, they do what everyone else is doing. And then when something different happens, then they complain about it. But eventually, if they decide that it's something that could work out for them, then they just fall in line and go along. And you see it all the time with Apple products. I mean, when Apple released I'll use the iPod as an example. How many companies said that was a horrible thing? Or the iMac getting rid of the floppy drive.
Right. Or the iPhone.
Or the iPhone,
costing too much money. Or iTunes offering, only the one pricing thing. On and on and on. Apple doesn't enter a market unless they think they can disrupt it.
Right. And typically they do disrupt that market.
Right. And I'll say again, iAd offers more potential, more opportunity for Apple to get it wrong than anything else they're doing, with the possible exception of Ping, but we'll get to that later. but I think that that's not going to happen. I think that Apple is going to continue to be successful with iAd. And we should also keep in mind that Apple's goal with iAd is not to own the advertising market. The goal is to offer a quality experience that make their developers money and make Apple money in the process. As long as they're making a higher profit on it, I think, than everybody else, and as long as is they're able to deliver eyeballs and deliver advertising dollars to their developers, I think that they'll be quite pleased with the results.
You know, the way you said that made me realize there's a lot of companies that have the wrong philosophy about how relationships should work, and they're thinking about what's in it for me. Whereas, of course, Apple's thinking that, but they're also thinking, how can we make this a symbiotic relationship and get something for both of us out of it?
Well, yeah, I don't.
I'm making it sound far too altruistic, but in simple terms, it's if we can find a good way to create a symbiotic relationship, we're going to make money.
Yeah, yeah. And I actually I don't really think Apple cares too much about anybody else besides Apple, but I think that's actually where their quality comes from, in that they're making stuff that they want to use.
Sure. And just to be clear, when I presented that idea, I wasn't thinking that Apple is this friendly, wonderful, happy company that just wants to have hugs and friends. I mean, it's clearly all about making money, and that's okay, because if they don't make money, then ultimately we don't have cool products to talk about.
Yes.
Yeah, but I guess my point is they're trying to figure out a way to create a symbiotic relationship where they can make money, whereas a lot of companies, it's just about how can I get more money out of my clients.
Right.
And yeah, so if they can find a way that they can get that balance so that they make the money they want and have something to draw these potential clients in, then they should be successful.
Yeah, I think so. The long and the short of it, though, is I think that Carol Bartz is going to end up eating her words, or
yeah,
or you know, at least getting mocked. Here, I'll go ahead and mock her. That's a preemptive mocking.
Your mocking is brilliant.
Thanks. All right, yeah. Now let's look at another. There's one of the themes that we talked about there about this advertising thing. I think plays into our next story, which was the European carriers being all pissy about Apple and Google becoming a point of contact for services on mobile devices.
You know, that whole story with just a few minor edits could sound like something from The Onion.
Yeah. Or, you know, it also kind of sounds like it kind of actually sounds a lot like Carol Bartz's complaints about Apple's control. And it also reminds me of the issues with iTunes and both the music studio, music labels, and the TV and movie studios.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, this is a lot like that. The parallel being, here's a market where Apple has gone in and been disruptive. And in this case, Google has followed them in and they're adding to that disruption. They don't like the changes in the marketplace, and they being the companies that are already there. And so now they're trying to desperately find a way to cling to the business models that they've used before.
Right.
And that's becoming more and more difficult as Apple and now Google are getting more traction in the mobile phone market.
And I've got another way to say it.
I can't wait to hear it.
And I'm not contradicting you here. I'm adding to what you're saying. These guys haven't gotten it right. They haven't done things in a way that customers really like. And Apple has found an opportunity from that. And Google, to a lesser extent, we'll get to that in a bit, but Google, to a lesser extent, is also glomming onto that opportunity. And their reaction is not to try to, address the core reason of why it is that people would turn to this alternative, but rather try to artificially block that alternative. It's the same thing with the labels. It's going to end up being the same thing with Apple's advertising, and I lost my train of thought.
All right. Well, then I'm going to carry on with that, and I'll just carry on with that. Okay. So, does it strike you as a little odd that the European cell service providers are openly talking about having this meeting where they're essentially colluding to find a way to block other companies from having a stronghold in a market?
Yeah, but only from our American-centric viewpoint. I mean, that sort of collusion is illegal here. It's not explicitly illegal in Europe. In fact, as one of our readers pointed out, the European telecom market in the first place is already sort of forced onto specific standards, and these telecoms have a lot less individual power than the telecoms do here in the States, because they're pipe guys, and
yeah,
you know, they want to be they're pipe guys that customers have to deal with. And they want to preserve that. Where here in the States, the pipe guys there's no competing from the standpoint of people being able to just get up and walk away from one carrier and go to another. So the contracts are able to lock people in more strongly here because you can't take your device and take it to another competing network because that device isn't going to work.
Right. Now, that'll potentially change in the next, well, in the coming years as the LTE networks roll out in the United States.
Yeah, but they're all using their own different versions of that too. Right? I'm truly questioning there. I'm not positive about that.
Well,
but I believe that they're using different versions of 4G.
Okay, and not being an expert on 4G, I can't say for certain. I thought that there was a standardization in the whole LTE 4G thing, and I might be completely wrong. And I bet we have listeners that are far more knowledgeable about this than us, and can fill in the blanks.
Why don't we just go ahead and edit that out so that our listeners don't realize what idiots we are?
I think that sounds awesome.
Excellent. We'll just move along, and they'll never notice.
Perfect.
Excellent. So let's step back a little bit and look at the problem. So what Apple did is for the very first time ever, they controlled the customer experience when they went in and dealt with these telecoms. They were able to basically set it up so that, you know, they could sell the phone. People go to Apple for support, and the customers are basically using the telecom as a carrier, and Apple's the one that maintained the relationship.
That's a really good point, and
that's what they're pissy about.
Yeah. Well, prior to Apple doing what they did with the iPhone, the way the system worked was you'd have the cell service providers telling the manufacturers, build a phone with these features.
Right.
And so they were dictating what companies like Motorola, Nokia were doing with their products. And no good can come of that, which is obvious based on the phones we were seeing before the iPhone came out. I mean, well, and even still, a lot of the phones that come out are just absolute crap.
I certainly think so.
And
you know, no consistency. There was so much that was wrong with the telecom market, and that's where Apple saw the opportunity to be disruptive.
Yes.
Right. So again, we have that same theme coming back here, and I've got to laugh at these chuckleheads at these European telecoms. Thinking, even daring to think that they can do better than Apple and Google, that they can somehow. Well, so for one thing, if the only thing they can do to fight Apple is to not carry the iPhone, because Apple is going to give up the control that Apple has, and the iPhone has been powerful enough at luring new customers. Customers that pay more than other customers, that
right.
Apple is able to maintain control. Apple doesn't have to give up anything to keep selling these phones for you know, in all the markets that they're in.
Yeah, the only exceptions have been countries where there are federal laws that say this specific thing is not allowed across the board.
Yeah, right.
Right. So, like, I think it's in Egypt. I don't know if it's changed, but at least for a while, having a GPS in your phone, I think a GPS in general, was against the law.
Or in China, you couldn't have Wi-Fi.
Right. Now, China has changed those rules. So now you can have Wi-Fi, which that's a huge thing. I mean, if China's doing that, well, of course, that also opens up a lot more for Apple and... I totally lost where I was going with that. It was going to be brilliant.
That. I could feel it too. It was probably the best point you were ever going to make.
It probably was, and now it's lost.
So these telecoms, they're basically going to maybe find an alternate mobile phone OS, which again I laugh. If these guys think that they can make a better OS than Google or Apple, although they can possibly screw Google in the process, and and they're basically going to somehow, I don't know, the whole thing is laughable because these chuckleheads couldn't do it right in the first place, and they still can't do it right.
I remember where I was going when I derailed myself. But we can see parallels in the music industry and in the TV industry as well, with companies trying to create their alternate service or product to push Apple off to the side.
Right.
And so, like, in the music industry, there's all of these alternate services that have cropped up for music, and most notably the subscription music services,
right,
which overall have been a big failure.
Big failure, yep. And you've got competing services to iTunes where the labels give seemingly more favorable contracts, more favorable options. I mean, Amazon is able to sell music for less than Apple does.
Right, and that's not an issue where Apple is saying we want to charge more.
No, Apple actually wants the labels to charge less.
Yeah, that's the labels making that happen.
Right, and yet iTunes still rules.
Yeah.
Everybody and their brother made digital media devices that were cheaper than Apple's, but, you know, the iPad ruled. There are cheaper smartphones, and, you know, Apple definitely doesn't rule or own the smartphone market, although I do think they control the direction of it.
Oh, they clearly do. Well, they control the direction of the PC market as well, even though they don't have the lion's share of the market there.
Yeah, not even close, of course. So the other thing about this telecom thing is I think that Google's whole model of allowing Android to be an open source platform is going in the long run to torpedo the entire platform as a whole. Because, you know, we've seen, is it Ophone in China?
Ophone, that's right.
They basically have branched Android. They took what Google did, and they will continue to take what Google does. And they're using it for themselves, and Google doesn't really have any access to it. They're not paying anything to Google for the value-added apps that Google was charging for. And the only kind of advertising that Google will have access to is browser-based advertising.
You know, if Google's point is to make a lot of money off of Android, then having it open in the way that it is, so the companies like Ophone can take just the parts they want and then never have to pay Google anything. Mm-hmm. Well, that's a bad model.
I think so.
So
I think it's a ridiculous model.
It is. So what I'm wondering is if Google's objective with Android is not to be a revenue generator, but to fracture other parts of the smartphone market. Now I'm saying this, and I'm thinking, to what end?
Yeah, so, I think their model was to make sure that they have a vehicle for mobile ad displays because they think that mobile ad displays are eventually going to be bigger than desktop ad displays.
Okay, that seems far more reasonable. Now, if you as a cell phone manufacturer, in this case we'll just use Ophone because it's already out there, if you were taking just that underlying core that's not necessary to pay for, then where's the revenue generator part for Google?
And there is none except for web ads that Google is selling.
Right. And how is that working for Google in China? And I'm asking not rhetorically. I honestly don't know.
I personally imagine that other Chinese manufacturers are going to end up doing the same thing, cutting Google out of the process. And as a matter of fact, they'll probably – I have no evidence of this whatsoever, but it wouldn't surprise me if the Chinese government encouraged them to do that because Chinese government's tense with Google to begin with. But we also see HTC doing the same thing. They've taken phones and the Android phones and put their own wrapper around them and replaced Google services, some of those very same services that Google looks to Android to make money with, and replaced them. Verizon's done the same thing. And the open source nature of Android, I think, is going to end up resulting in a lot of carriers and mobile phone handset makers taking what they want and leaving out everything that actually matters to Google. And I think that's going to be a really big problem for the Android platform going forward.
I think you're right, because, well, what it comes down to is, if you are a mobile phone manufacturer, what you want to do is make sure people buy your phone and not an Android product,
right,
even though it's running on Android. Because if it's just an Android product, what's the differentiating factor there?
Price. And that's it. I don't know, price, display quality. There are a couple of things that they can, there are a couple of quality areas where they can compete. But by and large, it's going to end up coming down to price, which is the same thing that has destroyed the PC market.
Okay,
destroyed the profit base.
So what it comes down to then for the Android market is, or for mobile phone makers using Android, it's not the OS, it's the features that go along with it. So they need to do things to differentiate their phones physically to set them apart from other Android products.
Right.
And that's exactly what companies like HTC are doing, because they're going in and, just like you said, they're taking the part that they can build on and create their own customized version of Android OS. So it's HTC's product from start
to
finish.
Well, and that's what they hope to do. At the very least, that's what they're trying to do already.
Now, a problem you're going to have with that, which we already have, is the fragmentation of the market. I mean, which Android market thing do you get to use? You know, which company's version of the market will you have access to, and which apps can you actually run? I think it's going to be a huge problem, and is a problem that could push people away from Android-based phones.
Well, at the very least, it's a problem that isn't going to leech as many sales away from Apple as they might otherwise have. And there we, you know, if we contrast this with Apple's approach to this market, you know, the big problem with cell phones before Apple and the iPhone was that all these other companies suck at doing this. And I'll go ahead and...
Right.
My apologies. You probably heard some beeps there. the telecoms and the handset makers were just, you know, miserable at making something we actually wanted to use. The Motorola Razr was one of the first phones that was cool, and it was mainly cool from its physical form factor. The interface was pretty much still a nightmare.
Yeah, I think you're about to have to add in another beep there for me, because I mean, frankly, that was interface.
Yes, it was.
It really was. But the phone itself was actually really
cool. The phone was cool, right? Making a phone call on it was pretty cool, as long as you didn't really care about getting to your address book. And the same thing is true with all of them. I mean, they were just, it was real hit and miss. And, you know, you go from one phone to another, you got to learn the new thing. And that's exactly what's going to happen with this Android stuff, with people putting their own wrappers around it and branching the Android OS. There's not going to be any consistency. And again, you're going to be having to learn a new interface when you go from phone to phone. All these things. And in the meanwhile, if you have an iPhone, you're probably going to be pretty comfortable in the next iPhone. And you're probably going to be, as a matter of fact, you're probably going to be pretty comfortable if you're upgrading three models at one time.
Yeah.
You know, and that sort of thing is, in my opinion, one of the strengths of the proprietary whole widget approach. It's, you know, it's why that iPhone experience, why that Mac experience, why that iPod experience was so superior to all the other experiences. Because these other guys can't do it, and Apple can. And Apple can do it because they control the hardware and the software.
Right. It goes back to the same problem and same complaints people have had in the PC market, where you have products that are designed by committee, and that committee consists of several companies that all have their own motives for wanting certain things to happen. So you end up with the lowest common denominator feature set, and so it's going to be bland in comparison.
Right. And, you know, ironically, Microsoft has got is closer to having this right than Google, because Microsoft ensures that, at least I think they're doing this with Windows 7, they're ensuring that the Windows 7 interface is the interface that you're gonna have if you're running a Windows 7 device. And they did the same thing with Windows a long time ago. Do you remember it was either HP or Compaq had their little custom...
Oh, they had their skin. Packard Bell, I think, Packard did that Bell, too. They put a skin over Windows.
Yeah. And Microsoft put a stop to that.
As well they should have, because, I mean, with the problems and complaints that people have about using Windows OS as an interface, these other companies were doing it a lot worse, and that's saying something.
Yeah, and it would have been a real nightmare if everybody was having to deal with you know, going from skin to skin. It would have been a nightmare from the standpoint of what Microsoft cares about. What I'd like to see. Well, anyway, we'll talk about desktop computing another time. But the long and the short of it is that these issues. The telecom's trying to take control back, and all these kinds of things, and handset manufacturers branching Android OS. These things are going to keep Android from taking more market share than they might otherwise be able to take from Apple if Google was just being more controlling than it is. If Google was ensuring the Google experience, and they're not. And I think that's going to end up limiting the appeal of the platform.
I think you're absolutely right.
All righty. Should we talk about ping?
You know, I really like the way you say ping, and I'm not sure why, because I could see where that could be really annoying.
I know, yeah.
For some reason, I like
and
it.
And I'm taking that from friends with the roommate that... Chandler Bing had for a while. Whenever Chandler would say his name, his roommate would go, Bing!
Oh, okay. See, I saw so few episodes of Friends that I know it's probably surprising.
It's a good show. Be that as it may, Ping is Ping... Ping is interesting. You know, do you remember we were getting rumors about Apple doing some kind of social networking thing starting, a couple years ago?
Right. And it was interesting because the rumors kind of bounced around. But there was this kind of consistency where music was related to it in some way.
Right.
And now we have Ping.
Now we have Ping. And for one thing, I think it's very telling that we haven't heard Apple crowing about other milestones.
Well, I'm certain that initial 48-hour window where they got 1 million people signed up for Ping is because there's so many people that went, okay, I want to try this out and see what it's all about.
Yeah, the and hardcore Apple fans.
Right. And so we all sign up. So over 1 million of us sign up. And then by the next week, everyone's hearing our first impressions, and no one else is signing up.
Right? Yeah, people aren't so excited about what's going on that it's continuing to lure new people in. Now, because Apple hasn't announced any figures, I mean, there's two sides, I guess, to not knowing how many more. Right? The reality is that they probably haven't crossed the 2 million person barrier yet. But we don't know.
That seems reasonable.
You know, it could be that they haven't crossed the 10 million person barrier, but you know.
Right. And it might be that they wanted to get that initial figure out, And then they're kind of pulling back a little bit because it almost feels like there's a Zen thing going on with Ping. Like, okay, we tossed it out there. Let's see what happens. And then they're going in and making minor adjustments along the way. And right now they're actually very minor adjustments, but it sure feels like a beta, early beta service to me.
Well, there's not a lot to it. I mean, I'm actually hopeful that Ping's going to end up being something interesting. But there are several things that will ensure that it never even comes close to competing with Facebook. Actually, there's a million things ensuring that it'll never come close to Facebook. But let's look at some of those things.
Well, how about the fact that it's completely closed off from any other service?
Right. Yeah. There's no third-party value-added service. You can only access it through iTunes.
And many of the features are accessible only from within the iTunes store. So you actually have to leave the Ping interface to create content for Ping.
Right, which, I mean, that's a kind of a good and a bad thing, because at least when you're signed up with Ping and you do something in iTunes, it shows up in Ping automatically.
Right. Okay. Which brings up an important point. A lot of people, I think, have missed the point that Ping is not there just so we can say hi to our friends. The purpose of Ping is to sell music at the iTunes store.
Right. But because we can't say hi to our friends or find out what our friends had for breakfast, there's a lack of a daily component to it. Because, you know, the reality is people don't go to Ping on a day. I'm sorry. People don't go to the iTunes store and buy music on a daily basis. And they're never going to be buying music on a daily basis. That's not, you know, when you buying music is by and large something you do, you know, a few times a year. And you know, even the most avid music fan is not doing stuff on a daily basis.
Now, I will beg to differ with you for the moment, meaning this might be a short-term difference of opinions.
Okay.
I have noticed actually quite a few people that are buying multiple songs every day. Now,
there are people that you know for a fact, I mean, not that you're seeing music bought every day, but you've specifically noticed that for the last 14 days in a row, this person has bought music every day?
Or nearly every day. And there have been multiple people doing that. Now, the caveat is these are people that are in the same journalistic circle that we are. So it may very well be that a lot of these people are doing this so that they can try out different features so that they can talk about what Ping does from firsthand experience. And once they've been able to glean enough information out of the whole process, then they will stop buying stuff all the time and go back to their regular habits, assuming the regular habit is I'll buy an album every now and then and maybe a song every month or two, and that's it. So for now, I'm seeing a lot of people that are buying music far more often than I would have ever expected. Hmm. But like I said, that might be a short-term thing.
Hmm. Interesting. All right. Well, I'm happy to stand corrected on that.
But this might be out of the norm. So you may still be completely correct. And what I'm seeing is just the testing that certain people are doing.
Fair enough. Although I don't really think that I don't think you need to buy multiple songs every day. I mean, because there's not really much to test. I mean, what can you do? You can buy stuff, you can like stuff, and you can comment on someone else's like.
Right. And now I did notice a couple days ago that artists that have their Ping thing that people can follow. I don't want to call it a Ping page. So I guess their Ping account that people can follow, they can insert stuff into their Ping stream that is not an album purchase, an album like, or a comment to something someone else has done.
Right.
But regular mere mortals like us, everything we do has to start from something that's initiated through the iTunes store.
Right. Right. And actually, I think that Apple is making a mistake by making the artists – accounts invitation only, although that will probably eventually be opened up.
Yeah, that's, I hadn't thought about that, but you're right. So, yeah, so every time someone wants to follow the band they like, that has to be approved.
Well, and it's not only does it have to be approved, it's invitation only. So it's worse than it being approved. It's got to start with Apple.
Interesting. I hadn't noticed that, but then again, I think I'm following two bands. And I don't even remember how I ended up following them.
But, I mean, yeah, you probably saw someone else following them.
I probably did, because I think I signed, or I started following one or two artists, like, on the first day as I was trying some things out. So I'd have to go back and look at my notes. But making it so that there are extra steps involved in following artists is a bad move.
Yeah, and you know, Apple should want thousands of artists with accounts. And although I see, actually, they've added some in the last week. Well, there's what, two pages of featured artists? And what the heck is that about? There's two pages of featured artists, and it's actually a page and a half.
And yeah, and the thing I was confused about, are those the only artists, or are those just the ones that they've chosen to highlight right now for whatever reason?
Well, originally, you saw the artists, that was just on your recent activity page, right? It was at the top. There was the panel of artists that follow. And that was all of them. Because, again, this is starting with Apple. You know, it's invitation only.
Okay.
So, I mean, that's a problem. Apple should want thousands and thousands of artists contributing to this. And, you know, I don't get me wrong. I'm the first to point out that would be sort of difficult. So, for instance, Nirvana has got an artist account. Well, who in Nirvana is it? Is it Courtney Love? Or is it the Dave Grohl or the big goofy bass guy? I forget his name. You know,
I'm not sure.
But who is it? Is it their management? We don't know.
That's a really good question.
We don't know. And then now, how do you then manage that going forward? You know, so let's say that a band breaks up. Well, who's going to keep control of that? I mean, there's all kinds of logistical issues that definitely make this sort of a nightmare. And to that extent, I can understand Apple at least starting it out being invitation only because they don't really know how to do it yet.
Okay, yeah. But, well, okay, so this whole thing is very, I'm going to say organic right now because it's clearly in flux. And since it's driven from essentially a web server that's appearing in the iTunes app, mm-hmm. they can change things on the fly, which is actually cool because they can do all these updates the interface.
It'd be a real problem if in order to get a ping update, you had to get an iTunes update.
Yeah, and I've been noticing just little subtle changes on a regular basis. Like it was, I think this afternoon, I noticed that my activity, which previously I had to look at my profile view to see the things that I was doing on ping, mm-hmm. are now showing up just in my regular stream.
Paul McCartney's got a page. The Beatles aren't on iTunes, but Paul McCartney has got an artist account.
Now, all the Beatles as individual artists are available at the iTunes store. It's just the Beatles as a band aren't.
Right.
Which I find to be very ironic is probably not the correct
amusing?
Word. So, amusing, thank you. Amusing is the correct word.
Questionable? Silly?
I'm going to go with silly and amusing.
All right, we'll go with that. Yeah. So this is the 18th when we're recording this. I think it's going to go up on the 19th. It was announced on September 1st, so it's only been around for 18 days, And they've already made lots and lots of little changes.
Yeah, they have.
There are all kinds of changes that they've made to what's going on.
Right. So that tells me that they're paying attention to what people are saying and how they're using Ping.
Right.
Which gives me hope for the future.
Right. But, you know, I wonder, the big thing about social networking, the sites that have made it, MySpace when it still mattered and now Facebook, is, of course, that whole daily component. You know, people interact with each other through those services. And they're really, like, as you already said, there's not much interaction going on here with the Ping. So I wonder how that's going to, you know, how sticky can Ping ever be? There we go.
Well, if it's completely isolated, I don't think it can be. So I imagine that at some point Apple is going to have to open up Ping, like create APIs, so that you can have some sort of interaction with Ping outside of iTunes. And then they also need to open it up so that you can deal with more than just music in Ping.
Yeah. Well, for instance, I'd like to be able to like albums from my music library.
Now, see, that's the kind of touchy point for Apple, isn't it? Because if it's an album that isn't available through the iTunes store.
Well, that's fine, though. That's fine. So I mean, Apple is pretty clever about identifying what's available on iTunes.
Okay, that's true. So if they could look at the music that you have in your library and then match it up with content that they offer through the iTunes store, so in albums that you have ripped.
Right.
You can tag and mark also.
Yeah, and I'd like to be able to post comments about stuff directly from my music library, too. I don't want to have to look it up, especially when you can only have one page open at a time in Ping. In the iTunes store. You know, you can't have two instances of the iTunes store open, at least not that I've been able to figure out.
I don't think you can.
And I don't want to have to go and find stuff that I want to comment on. Only from the iTunes store. And I'd love there to be a separate Ping app, especially for the iPad.
Well, now you will have Ping access once iOS 4.2 comes out. However, having a separate app would be kind of cool.
Yeah, it would be. I actually don't really want to have to check up on Ping by going to the iTunes store, especially on my iOS devices. And I'd like to be able to catch up on Ping updates from a browser.
That'd be okay too.
You know,
one thing I would like is to be able to see what other people are listening to. Now, and my first thought on that was, oh, that's really stupid, because now every 3 minutes and 5 seconds, essentially, I'm going to see a new post show up showing the next song that someone's listening to. So what I was thinking was, instead of having it show up like that, maybe there's something
from the people interface.
Yeah, so you can look at the people interface and see what they're listening to, and if you could even add something in so that it updates in their most recent entries.
Oh yeah, like just a single status update for what I'm listening to now.
Yeah, so whatever their last update is that they did, you're like, hey, I really like this album. Okay, that one's showing also what song they're currently listening to.
Right.
But then, yeah, if you go and look at their profile, it shows what song they're listening to.
Right. Well, I would use it all the time if I could look at the people that I'm following and see what they're listening to now just by, you know, sort of scrolling down that particular window, that particular interface. You know, in other words,
yeah.
As we're saying, not having it show up in your timeline, but just something that we can sort of voyeuristically look in on.
And yeah, that would be okay. I would like that.
And I think that would elicit all kinds of people clicking on what other people are listening to because they see it for the first time.
Right.
So, a big part of what Ping is supposed to be for is of course, to keep people coming back to the iTunes store.
Right. It's a music sales mechanism.
Right. Right. Yeah. So that would be a really, what I'm listening to right now, would be a really great feature if they implemented it correctly.
I agree. And right now, the way it works, where I have to proactively think about, oh, I want to go find this album that I'm not buying, but I have, and I want to tell people I like it.
Right. Yeah, that's actually, it's kind of a pain in the butt. I went through and I did about 20 albums. By the way, I'm Brian Chaffin, BryanChaffin. You can follow me in Ping if you'd like. And Jeff's there too.
I am. I think, who am I? I think I'm Jeff Gamet.
I think you are, yeah. And I went through and I liked about, I don't know, 20 or 30 albums. I posted on a few that I thought were really cool. But it's a laborious enough process that I haven't found myself doing it as readily as I would if it was easier.
Right. I agree. And the thing that you mentioned, if you could go through your iTunes library and tell people about what you like from there.
Yep.
That would be really nice too.
Well, so now let's look at some of the stuff that's actually cool. One of the things I noticed, there's a band called The Spirals, my favorite band out of San Francisco right now. I love that band. They are just fantastic. So if I go to, well, as a matter of fact, we'll include a link to The Spirals EP. It's $3.96. You should buy it. It's really cool. And I noticed that I see a little square that shows my friends that have this album.
Oh, that's very cool.
So you should see. Do you follow Peter Cohen?
I do.
So you should probably see both of us having it. Is that correct?
I need to,
So the spiral. You want the Spirals EP is what it's called.
All right, let me go hop over, because you're actually looking at the iTunes Store interface. Yeah. Okay, so hold on, I'll hop over and look up The Spirals.
This is live podcasting.
This really is live podcasting. Okay, which album do I need to look up?
The Spirals EP. That's Spirals.
Oh, see, I spelled it wrong.
Yeah, that's easy to do. They're a psychedelic band out of San Francisco that they've got a sound that just, you know, it could be in the 60s if it wasn't so great. You know, it's just, I don't know, it's good. They have both feet planted firmly in the 60s.
Which is cool. So, all right, so I'll end up having to buy this. All right, so when I go and look at it, okay, this is a problem with the interface because I don't own this album. But you do, and Peter does?
Peter does, yeah. And so I see people who have this, Peter Cohen.
And I don't see that at all.
Really?
Yeah. And you're talking about looking in the iTunes Store interface, right?
Yeah, I'm in the iTunes Store. I've got the Spirals EP.
Mm-hmm. I'm looking at it right now. Look Around, Soul, High and Dry, and Helping Hand.
Right. Well, huh.
And I'm not seeing.
Did you stop following me? Do you hate me?
No, I love you. No, I'm following you, and I'm not seeing that you and Peter own the album. I wonder if I were to buy it, if I would see Peter.
That would be ridiculous. You should buy it because it's great.
All right, I'll buy it later. Since we're podcasting now, I'll buy it later.
Fair enough. Well, I thought. I'm actually truly perplexed because I thought that was a really cool feature. If I pull up an album, give me an album you do own, by the way.
Let's see.
You bought from iTunes.
Let's see. Okay, hold on. Tommy Remastered from The Who.
Tommy Remastered, my least favorite album from my favorite band. pulling it up. Tommy Frank Sinatra. What? Live
I'm
podcasting.
Pretty sure Frank Sinatra wasn't there.
Live. There we go.
In the album.
Tommy remastered. I don't own this, and I don't see that you own it. I would guess that this feature is not properly working yet.
I think that's a pretty safe bet.
Right. So, if they can get it working, that would be a really cool feature. If I pull up an album and I see that my friends, or I see which friends have already bought that album or already own it, then that to me would be a really cool selling thing, because then, you know, then I can turn around and ask them about it. You know, I'd also that would be a great feature. If I could pull up an album and then shoot you a note through Ping saying, hey, Jeff, what do you think of this album? Wouldn't that be cool?
That would be very
cool.
Wouldn't
that be cool? That would be a really smart feature. And then other people, the people that follow us both, would see that and be able to add their thoughts.
Yeah.
That would be a really cool feature. Are you listening, Apple? Add that in.
I hope they are.
Yeah. So the long and the short of it is, now that we've done our live testing, is that there's a lot of stuff that Ping doesn't have yet, but it does some things that are cool. It's got a lot of room, I think, before Apple can be assured of its ongoing viability. And I hope that it doesn't sort of get ignored like a lot of Apple things seem to get ignored after they're released.
I hope it doesn't get ignored as well. Because, yes, this does have so much potential. And, I mean, here we've done our little on-the-fly digging through features and realizing things that we think would be very, very cool.
Mm-hmm.
So if we've been doing this, how many other people are doing the same thing? And if those types of features were implemented, how much more likely would people be to use Ping?
Right. Right. By the way, I enjoy – do you follow Rick Rubin?
No, I don't.
He regularly goes through and likes albums and will post about albums. And I think that Rick Rubin is an amazing producer who has been super influential in the development of pop and rock for the last, you know, 30 years. And so I'm actually really interested in the things that he finds important. So he's one artist that I think is cool.
Okay.
He's a good follow.
I'm looking at him right now.
He's a good follow.
Wow, he has 83,466 followers.
Yeah, which is a lot at this point in Ping.
I would have to say so.
Yeah, Paul McCartney has only 27,000 in comparison.
Wow.
But Paul McCartney is also
brand
new.
Okay, now to be fair, and he also is wearing that funky pink shirt in his photo.
Well, but I mean, Rick was there from day one.
Right. Actually, I remember when when that suggestion bar was showing up in the first few days, that he was one of the people that always showed up in the bar for me.
Yes.
And for whatever reason, I just never clicked on his name.
Well,
all right.
You know.
I'm following him now.
Good. I think he's a good follow. Really interesting to see what Rick thinks. And with that, we've probably gone on quite enough.
Oh, we probably have. But, you know, that's kind of how we roll.
It's true.
Right. Okay, so actually, I guess this is the part where I say, yeah, this is me. If you have anything to comment on, add a question, send your audio or text comments to acm@macobserver.com. And remember, succinctness is next to steveliness. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. Thanks for listening. Thanks for sending us your comments and feedback. And you can feel free to follow me on Twitter. That's at twitter.com/jgamut. Oh, and also, Brian, we should let people know they can come see us in person at the beginning of October.
Yes, October 2nd. We're appearing and doing a panel with we'll have a booth and a panel at MCE.
Yeah, so that's Mac Computer Expo, mm-hmm. and that's October 2nd in Petaluma, I believe.
Petaluma. I always want to say Petaluma, but it's Petaluma.
Petaluma. Okay, and I wasn't sure exactly how to pronounce it, not being from... is that considered Northern California or just wine country?
Well, wine country / Napa is in NorCal.
Okay. So there you go. So anyhow, come see us at Computer Expo. We'll both be there. A lot of other really cool people will be there. A great time will be had by all.
Yeah, we're doing a panel with Adam Christensen and who else has done that?
Victor Callejo. And off the top of my head, I can't remember, but there's a couple other really great people on the panel too.
What should we say? Because we're really bad partners. Because we don't have that list in front of us. And anyway.
Well, see, this is what happens when we just start talking impromptu about something.
Yes, we didn't plan this out. So anyway, nonetheless, we're doing a panel about the future. I think the future of Apple.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's going to be a fun panel. And in the meanwhile, you can follow me at twitter.com/TMOBrian. You can look me up on Ping at Brian Chaffin. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly and the bass is by Boom, recorded just for us. Now, that's all for this week.
And as always, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.
Trapped by love.